And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Dan Fernandez.
Hi, I'm Mark DeFalco.
And Mark, we are both hockey fans.
We are.
We made a gentleman's bet, some money on the line, who got to buy lunch at the cafeteria.
But more importantly, yes, since our series went to a game 7, we had to raise the stakes.
Yes.
And what was your team, Dan?
The Washington Capitals, the better team, as I like to call them.
You could call them that.
Sure.
I'll call them the Eastern Conference semifinalist New York Rangers would be my team.
Yes. And, so I have to wear Mark jersey.
Ah, yes. It's a beautiful jersey. It's just wonderful.
It actually stings wearing it. I don't know if that's just it hasn't been washed or.
No. I wanted the stench of defeat to waft over you.
Yes. It's certainly not victory. I tell you that much. So let's get right into it because a lot of stuff going on. And our first story is Windows Dev Center.
Right. So this is the Windows Dev Center was launched around the timing of the original build back in October of 2011. And since then, we've kind of evolved it over time to try to better meet the needs of developers. And so this is a relaunch, a reimagining, if you will. And what's new is the navigation model has changed more to kind of go directly towards developers, designers, and business owners.
Mm-hmm.
As they felt that works kind of better if you, even if you're a hobbyist, you can kind of dive into the part that you are focusing on right now. Or if you're a larger company or a company that has those separate kind of aspects, you can go ahead and focus on your part. But the development is kind of the core into the normal dev center as you would have seen before into both store apps and C# and XAML and C++ and XAML or JavaScript HTML. Then the design section has been kind of redone with a lot of new information now that our design patterns has really been fleshed out. And then, of course, the business area, which has more marketing and the different pricing models we have in the store and everything like that. So
awesome.
The portal, msdn.microsoft.com/windows.
All right. So next story is actually just kind of a recap. And we had talked about this last week, some of the numbers in terms of the 100 million downloads and so on. 100 million licenses, I should say. This is the announcement that, and this was at the specific event was the J.P. Morgan Technology, Media, and Telecom Conference in Boston. And Tammy Reller basically announced the new name that Windows Blue will be called Windows 8.1.
8.1, yeah.
8.1? I call it dot.
All right.
8.1, 8.1. I go dot. But
81.
The point is you don't have to call it blue. It's not a code name anymore. Mm-hmm. That's going to be the official name. And it will be a free update to Windows 8 for consumers through the Windows Store. So very cool stuff. And obviously the other big thing is we'll be talking much more about this at the Build Conference.
Yes.
On May 26th through 28th, of which we are intimately involved. So good times. Now, next story, what is this?
Charles Petzold, who is a renowned author, he wrote the original.
Kind of a legend.
I believe actually in there it says legendary and renowned.
Oh, okay.
Legendary is because he wrote the first book. It was called Programming Windows. And that first edition was out in 1988, when Windows was a very, very different world. And he talks about that. This is an interview with Jaime Rodriguez and him. And it's actually a interactive. They were taking questions from the audience and answering them live, everything about why. I'm sorry, maybe go back a little bit more. This is now about the sixth edition of his book, Programming Windows is out. And this was just released the end of last year, I believe,
mm-hmm.
and is based on C# and XAML primarily. And it's about Windows 8 apps and like kind of the new feel. So he went all the way from originally when it was all COM and C++ back then. And over these editions have wanted to now focus on the kind of modern style. There's stuff in there about delivering on different sizes and platforms and delivering more importantly on touch and how you do with pointers and mouse and keyboard and all that. So the real modern problems with programming on Windows.
Awesome. So our friend Dan Delamarski did a new app called Mission Control, which is a flexible API for remote device control. So the idea here is you probably have a number of different devices. As you can see, you can actually have multiple different devices controlling, and you can actually send commands via IR. So You can imagine, say, for example, there's a Fidget's IR emitter that basically allows, will send a signal to, say, your TV, your DVD player, and so on. And that way you can actually use your phone to send that commands to the computer, which then sends it on over. So it's kind of like a relay, mm-hmm. but it's one app to control multiple devices. And he goes through step by step all the different mm-hmm. code that needs to happen, from controlling the hardware to getting the messages, and so on. So definitely a cool app. And for people that are looking for a remote control app, for controlling infrared devices.
It's a fun at home project. I mean, yeah. I know we all kind of, as time goes on, get more and more technology all across the living room and across there, and it'd be nice just to pop it open, turn your lights on, your Xbox on, the sound on. That's actually the four devices for me, really.
Okay,
I play
all
the
right.
remotes all over the place.
Good,
so.
Good.
I can think of other things. I don't know.
Yes. The Blend Tech. Okay, so Visual Studio ALM Ranger solution. So we've talked about the ALM Rangers. Now it looks like they have a catalog of their stuff.
It's a good name they have there, the ALM.
I want to be an ALM Ranger. Ranger is a cool title.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Fighter Thief is normally what I would roll.
Just want to note that we have this on tape, him saying Rangers are pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great title.
So the ALM Rangers,
like,
yes, have been around. I think they're originally internal, but now they're MVPs and external. And I think a good point of that, part of that, was to get real world experience into delivering these kind of quick response code snippets or little features that can be delivered, and extensions or just publications. You know, white papers on how to get around certain scenarios if you're. Team infrastructure has something about the best way to branch in TFS, or
how to handle TFS upgrades.
TFS upgrades, sure. When you have multiple solutions across different versions, all these kind of practical guides on how to do stuff. So this is a one kind of stop shop. They break it down by category, whether it's build and deploy, database integration, lab environments, reporting, analytics. And you can go and find kind of whatever guide you need to help you along your way.
Very cool. So this next highlight is actually from the Quality A to Z Roadshow. And it's basically a series of videos that are going online and from the value of quality and trying to take out the word, say, testing, and really thinking about quality and quality enablement and what people really need to think about. The bigger you scale and the things you need to have, quality is sort of like a top-level metric, and really throughout the entire application developer lifecycle. So there's a lot of really interesting area in here for people that are interested, whether it's test planning, specification, execution, test infrastructure, virtualization, like what happens, how do I do things like repro bugs and so on. So lots of good stuff to play with. Cool. Which brings us also to Rick. You know, we talked about Rick's processing, Rick Barraza, of course, talking about processing last week. This week, he actually does just a real quick tutorial on how to get started with Cinder for Windows Store apps. And Cinder is basically a library for think of them as design engineers. Sometimes they're called creative coders. But these are people that are using C++ to do really high-end graphics, whether that's 3D or whatever. In the case of Windows Store app, Cinder has been a library that has been working across desktop and iPhone, mm-hmm. iOS, Android, and so on. Now we've actually added Windows Store support. And underneath the covers, it's obviously not using OpenGL, which is what it uses on the other platforms, so it uses DirectX. But this goes through the actual step-by-step that you would need to get it ready and working, and so you can build some cool apps. And Rick has a number of videos coming as well that'll show how to build Cinder apps. So cool stuff.
And he's been working on that stuff for quite some time, playing around with Cinder. It's one of his kind of pet projects. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Solving mazes.
Yeah, so what is this?
This is a little article about solving mazes with AI pathfinding. A-Star versus...
Trimo?
We're going to come to consensus on that one.
Sure.
But if you're not familiar, they're both pathfinding algorithms. A-Star kind of uses a kind of combination of heuristic and where I think I should be going to find a path through a graph or maze of some sort. And in this article, they're showing these kind of graphical representations, converting pixels, You don't get the animation on the slide we have, but
yeah.
If you go to the page, there's actually an even a JavaScript maze solver, and it will visualize it for you. Yeah, that little guy.
So
there.
That little red thing would actually go through, and it does kind of the step-by-step, and it does the analysis of how you can do things, for example, like go through a maze using diagonals, using not diagonals, and it basically does the costing
right.
from point one to, you know, start to your endpoint.
Yeah, and that's where in A*STAR the heuristic comes into play of like trying to estimate the cost of what you think you have left and try to take the best path and guessing at that. But we were actually having a cool conversation about Unreal bots and things.
So Andy Serlin and James Lisiak in 2007, we did some programming AI bots, which was basically a simple app that allowed you to build Unreal Tournament bots, and then everybody would throw their tournament bots in and see who's won.
Which turns out to be actually what I worked on while I was working on my master's degree in college, was exactly the same thing. We ended up using the same back end called Game Bots, which converted message like what you saw on the server down to messages, down to a client that you can parse, and then do stuff like this and do your pathfinding or try to find. But at this point, you're introducing cost like, well, if there's ammo along the way, you know, we want to go along this path versus that one.
Yeah, and also, like, what's your health? So it's like, right. If I remember this thing, I should do the path back to the health.
Right, yeah.
So lots of cool stuff there. Mm. And if you just do a quick search on Unreal Tournament AI bots, you will find the .NET ones. And I don't know if they still work. I think you have to have the Game of the Year edition that one.
I mean, we're talking about the original Unreal Tournament, not
Well, ours built with a Game of the Year edition.
Game of the
edition,
Year, but I mean, this isn't, like,
yeah,
I think after that was 2003 or something.
Yeah, which they haven't updated it.
Maybe it'll run on DOSBox or something like that.
Yes, exactly. I'm sure it's still available on Steam or something.
Right.
So that brings us to Picks of the Week!
All right.
So this is hilarious.
So came across this. So Mads Christensen has some fantastic add-ons for Visual Studio. One of them I use all the time is Web Essentials 2012.
Which you see in the corner there. Recommended,
yeah, and that's actually, I think, has been featured previously. This one is called Farticus, and it is the original Visual Studio Fart app. I guess Visual Studio is going to become there's an app for that. everything else that you need, you can find either NuGet or Visual Studio templates. This one, let me see if I can open my solution here.
Yeah, let's see if we can get
some
sound.
What it does
going.
is it's configurable, all sorts of different sounds you can have, but when you when your build either fails or has warnings, it'll give you a nice little fart sound.
Can we get another one?
I'll try
a good
one. See if we can really get in this one.
Fantastic.
I think you get the point. Completely configurable for warnings and errors, a list of maybe 20 different samples, self-recorded. I have no idea where he got these from.
There's probably some...
some, maybe, mix.
Oh, good Lord.
But it's a way of letting your entire floor know if you have kind of that communal programming area. If you're
doing
some of that.
Oh, God.
Every time you break the builds,
you'll
break
do that
wind,
double tech. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think that's hilarious. So my pick of the week is actually the Blue Screen of Death. Who designed the original Windows Blue Screen of Death? And this is a question asked on Quora. And John Vert, ex-Windows NT kernel guy, basically tells the story that there was basically two reasons why they emulated that. And that was MIPS workstations basically had the boot option screen white on blue. And the slick edit default color scheme at the time was white on blue. So they decided to do that. He thinks Mark Lukowski was the guy who actually did it and had a bunch of hex numbers and so on. But that happened in the NT 3.1 days. And that lived on through, you know, countless versions of Windows now.
And until it was
blue
just it was just redesigned for Windows 8, it's still white on blue. It's just redesigned.
Yeah,
so it lives on.
Yeah. Blue background, white text.
Yeah, yeah.
Blue screen of death.
Yeah, yeah.
So I always love finding out these, like, little gems of the people that actually worked on it. So cool stuff.
Yeah.
All right, I am so excited to take this jersey off. And thank you, Mark, and thank you all.
Thanks.